Hello, this is Roz Friedman reading the Reader's Digest. The first story is from the section titled Inspiration. Rescue Dog. I was morbidly overweight and disconnected from the world. So was Petey. Then we found each other, by Eric O'Gray, from the book Walking with Petey. Any day that I had to go to the airport was the worst day of my life, and as a traveling appliance salesman, I had to fly quite a bit. On this day in 2010, I was assigned to a middle seat. I was so big I couldn't fit down the aisle facing forward, so I walked sideways like a crab. I could see the other passengers fear like cartoon thought bubbles above their heads. Please, God, don't let that humongous guy be in the seat next to me. I was 5'10" and weighed between 340 and 360 pounds. The exact number depended on whether you took my weight before or after one of my gargantuan meals. When I finally squeezed into my seat, the seatbelt wasn't long enough to fit around my 52-inch waist. They never were. The flight attendant said that he had run out of seatbelt extenders. They were going to have to get one from another plane. More than 30 minutes passed. Great, said the slender man in the window next to me. I'm going to miss my connection because you're so fat. I wanted to die. Right there in that seat, I wished my life would just end. I woke up the next morning knowing that I needed to change. I started looking for signs that might lead me toward a better life, and immediately a sign showed up. I turned on the TV and happened to catch an interview with former President Bill Clinton. He looked fit and full of energy, about half his former size. He said he'd been under the care of a doctor who put him on a whole food, plant-based diet. That was all it took, he said. He lost weight without feeling hungry, and he was healthier and stronger than he had been since his 20s. I never imagined my sign would come from Bill Clinton, but here he was. I had no idea what a whole food plant-based diet it was, but I ran with it, even though I couldn't actually run to save my life. I went online and searched for a doctor who could help me. I came across Preeti Kulkarni, a naturopathic doctor. I wasn't sure exactly what that meant, but I felt hopeful when she agreed to see me the next day. "So tell me about yourself," said Dr. Preeti, as she liked to be called. I told her I had type 2 diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure. I was on all sorts of meds for those. "If you stick to what I tell you, there's a good chance you won't need any of those in a few months," she said. "At every meal, just make sure that at least half your plate is full of fruits and vegetables and the rest is beans and rice or any other food that is not from an animal. If you do that, you'll start feeling better, and with exercise, I think you'll be really surprised how quickly things can change." She suggested I start with 20 minutes of light exercise twice a day, something you can enjoy like taking a walk, she said, and recommend that you go to a shelter and adopt a dog. "Exercise," I said. "A dog?" "A dog is a good companion," she said. "Plus, you live in an apartment, which means the dog has to be walked. So you walk your dog twice a day, and that will be your exercise." "I've never owned a dog. What about a cat?" I asked. "Have you ever seen anyone walk a cat?" And so a few days later, I drove up to the Humane Society Silicon Valley in San Jose, California, near where I lived. I had already spoken with Cassandra, who was in charge of adoptions. She said she had the perfect dog for me. But she offered some advice. Don't look him in the eyes at first. I knew that wouldn't be a problem. I had trouble making eye contact with anyone. Let him sniff your hand. Don't try to pet him right away. Just give him a second. He's a real sweet dog once he knows you. That didn't sound like the happy golden retriever I had in mind. Cassandra stepped out of the room, and I took a deep breath. My heart was pounding. Then I had heard footsteps approaching, dog nails on concrete. The handle on the door slammed. The door cracked open. A black nose tried to push its way in, and then the door opened all the way. There he was, a large black and white dog with a big round body, shuffling into the room with his head hung low. He looked up at me, and he dropped his head with a clear look of disappointment, like, "Really? This loser?" I suppose I looked at him the same way. "He's a border collie and Australian shepherd mix, to the best of our knowledge," Cassandra said. "As you can see, he's middle-aged and overweight, which means he's in need of a new routine. Just like the one you told me you needed. Raider's out of shape, his joints are swollen, he needs to start walking again." "Raider?" I asked. "Like the Oakland Raiders?" His owners were fans. I looked at him, petting him in silence. I wondered how many other dogs had come through here, and I wondered how many other humans like me were skeptical of the whole dog-human matchmaking process. I didn't want to let Cassandra down. I thought, this is what she does for a living. and she feels pretty strongly about this. I tried to give her the benefit of the doubt. Why does someone give this dog up, I asked. Cassandra flipped through a few pages of notes on a clipboard. There was a divorce. He was not being cared for the way that he needed. He spent a lot of time in a backyard by himself after his primary caregiver went off to college. And the family just felt like maybe there was a better home for him somewhere else. Raider sniffed my shoes. He looked up and I scratched him behind the ears. He seemed to like that. When I stopped for a moment, he lay down on the floor near my feet. Aw, look at that. He likes you already, Cassandra said. I have a good feeling about this. Just be patient. You have to understand that his whole life has been uprooted. It's going to take him some time to adjust. The poor guy, I said. It hit me how tough this dog's life had been. I looked down at Raider, and suddenly the sadness in his eyes didn't look like a reflection on me. It looked more like he was just done and ready to give up and die. Like me. I started to tear up. Can't I ask you something, I said to Cassandra. Can I change his name? I'm a 49ers fan. We hate the Raiders. Cassandra laughed. Yes, you can change his name. It might take him a while to respond, but why not? Fresh start. I named him Petey after the dog and the little rascals, and we took it slow, just as my doctor and Cassandra had recommended. We had to. Petey weighed 75 pounds when a healthy weight for him was more like 50 pounds. But on our first walk together, Petey took the lead. We made it halfway down the block and then came back. Luckily for me, he didn't walk very fast. You could practically hear my footsteps on the sidewalk as I swung each leg forward. Thump, 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 like the giant from Jack and the Beanstalk. The next day, we made it to the end of the block. Soon, he would lead me around the block. Then he'd want to keep going and I would tag along. At the same time, I was following Dr. Preeti's instructions for plant-based eating. Maybe 5 or 6 days after eliminating animal products from my diet, I woke up feeling like a new person. I rolled out of bed with ease. My knees weren't sore. I had also put Petey on vegan dog food. He appeared thinner and seemed to have a spring in his step, and he had stopped scratching all the time and shedding everywhere the way he had when I first brought him home. At my second office visit with Dr. Preeti, I weighed 5 pounds less than the week before. I'm actually surprised it's not more, I said, because I feel different. I feel lighter. A few days later, I went to take Petey for his morning walk, and he backed right out of his collar. He'd lost so much weight that it slipped off. My pants were almost falling off me, too. I tightened my belt as far as it would go, but I realized that if my belt were to slip, my pants would fall to the floor. That would not look good in the middle of an appliance store. I needed to go clothes shopping, something I had avoided for years. I would have ordered clothes online, but I didn't know what size I was anymore. At Men's Warehouse, the bending and squatting, dressing and undressing in the tiny dressing rooms left me overheated and miserable. This wasn't a victory lap. It was awful. I bought 3 pairs of pants and a few shirts and spent nearly $200. It felt like a ripoff. For the most part, what's available for men over 300 pounds is the equivalent of a muumuu, low-end, loud Hawaiian print shirts. Sitting on the couch that night, I thought maybe I should give it all up. Maybe I was too far gone. Then Petey jumped into my lap. He started licking my face, which made me laugh. I petted him, and he pressed himself into my belly and lay down on top of my thick thighs as if he were a tiny puppy snuggling up in a blanket. And then he looked up at me as if I were the greatest guy in the world. Oh, Petey, I said, are you sure you're not disappointed you wound up with me? He kept looking at me with those beautiful dark eyes, and then he smiled. I'd heard people talk about dogs smiling before, and I thought they were nuts, but he did. He opened his teeth slightly and pulled up the corners of his mouth. Suddenly, I wasn't feeling sorry for myself. I was thinking about Petey's happiness. I'm sorry, son, I said to him. I promise I won't let you down. Over the next weeks, Petey kept pulling harder and harder on the leash, raring to go. There were times when I couldn't keep up, even though I dropped 5 pounds a week, pretty consistently since I started the plant-based eating and walking. The misery of headaches, abdominal pain, and overall discomfort I'd lived with for years just disappeared. I felt good, not just better, but really good. I started taking Petey to different parks. I found one, Penitencia Creek County Park, just over a mile from my condo. According to the website, it was home to a stunning pond full of ducks and other wildlife, with golden mountains off in the background. How could something like that exist so close and I hadn't even known it was there? When we arrived, it was as if Petey had Google did on his own. He kept choking himself at the end of the leash, trying to run ahead. I picked up my pace the best I could, trying to give him some slack. I thought about how Petey's whole life had been lived pent up, caged up, or tied to the end of a leash. How could anyone allow a dog to get so out of shape that it didn't even want to run? Changing Petey's diet and taking these walks had freed him. Maybe it was time to let him experience what freedom really felt like. We stopped, and I unhooked his leash. Petey took off like a sprinter at the Olympics, head down, body forward, legs moving so fast they almost overtook him. He flew down the path and didn't slow one bit as he approached the edge of the pond. Instead, he leaped. My jaw dropped open as he sailed out over the pond. He must have traveled 7 feet through the air before he landed in a great big belly flop. Petey swam so hard he practically lifted his whole front end right out of the water, beaming with pride and excitement. "Woohoo!" I yelled. When he heard me, he swam to shore, ran out of the water, beelined right to me, and launched into a reverberating full-body shake of biblical proportions. He completely drenched me with mud and pond water, and not for 1 second did it make me angry. In fact, I laughed. I loved it, and in that moment, I realized I loved him. I was still laughing as he turned around and ran back into the water for another swim. Petey did the swim-to-shore shake-off and running back into the water thing about 8 more times before I was able to get him to sit and rest for a minute. He was panting like crazy, but between the sparkle in his eyes and the sight of his tongue hanging out of his big doggy smile, I knew he was perfectly okay. He looked up at me like I was the greatest guy in the world, and that's exactly what I wanted to be for him. I wanted to fulfill Petey's every dream. He'd come into my life, and simply by being there, he rescued me, and in that moment, I felt like the two of us could have done anything. "Want to keep walking?" I asked him. Postscript. O'Gray and Petey walked together for nearly 5 years until Petey died of cancer. Today, O'Gray weighs about 180 pounds, competes in marathon, and trains with his energetic lab mix, Jake. Still, to this day, Petey is never far from O'Gray's mind. And this was from the book Walking with Petey by Eric O'Gray. The next article in the Reader's Digest is from the Genius section. Ways to sharpen your mind. Don't let distress sideline you. Turn it into a strength instead. Fighting Trauma the Military Way by Michaela Haas from Yes Magazine, with additional reporting by Reader's Digest editors. When Army Surgeon Rhonda Cornum regained consciousness after her helicopter crash, she looked up to see 5 Iraqi soldiers pointing rifles at her. It was 1991, and her Black Hawk had been shot down over the Iraqi desert. Dazed from blood loss, with a busted knee, 2 broken arms, and a bullet in her shoulder, the then 36-year-old medic was subjected to a mock execution by her captors, sexually assaulted, and held prisoner for a week. Her crisis included textbook causes for post-traumatic stress, a near-death experience, sexual assault, utter helplessness, and yet after her release and medical rehabilitation, she surprised psychiatrists by focusing on ways she'd improved. "I became a better doctor, a better parent, a better commander, probably a better person," she says. Cornum's experience is far from unique. The term post-traumatic growth, coined by psychologists Richard Tedeschi and Lawrence Calhoun of the University of North Carolina of Charlotte, describes the many surprising benefits many survivors discover in the process of healing from a traumatic event. After counseling cancer survivors, the bereaved and severely injured veterans and prisoners, the researchers found growth in 5 main areas: personal strength, relationships with others, perspective on life, appreciation of life, and spirituality. Tedeschi doesn't believe trauma is a good thing, but he says in the wake of trauma, people become more aware of the fragility in life, and that upsettles some while it focuses others. This is the paradox. People become more vulnerable, yet stronger. Cornum is convinced that resilience is like a muscle. It strengthens when exercised and atrophies when neglected. In 2009, she became the director of the Comprehensive Soldier Fitness Program, a training regimen that now falls under the umbrella of the Army's Ready and Resilient, or R2, initiative. Today, every U.S. Army soldier takes part in resistance training, which has been shown to significantly decrease substance abuse and increase good coping skills, adaptability, and character strength. The training is so successful that psychologists believe it can help people from all walks of life. The program is something of a dichotomy. The military thrives on teamwork, yet during resilience training, soldiers concentrate on self-awareness. They learn how to focus on the present moment. Practicing a rhythmic breathing exercise, participants inhale deeply and exhale fully in a slow cadence. Focusing on their breathing helps them unlock muscle tension. Harvard University neurobiologist Sarah Lazar has shown that meditation can literally change your brain. It can actually shrink the fear center in the brain that might be enlarged after a trauma and trigger flashbacks of anxiety and panic. Because being thankful may help lower anxiety levels, the Army instructs soldiers to hunt the good stuff by keeping gratitude journals. Study at the University of California, Davis shows that grateful people not only report being more content with their lives, but also have fewer medical symptoms and more energy. Just as important to the Army, cultivating gratitude tends to make people more social and willing to help and work with others. So every day, soldiers jot down three things they were grateful for the previous day. To help them learn from their good fortune, they write about each event using the following prompts. Why has this good thing happened? What does this good thing mean to me? And what can I do tomorrow to enable more of this good thing? How did I or others contribute to this good thing? If pen and paper aren't handy, GIs are encouraged to blot out feelings of self-blame with a tactic known as detecting icebergs, beliefs and values that fuel out-of-proportion reactions. For instance, if an action causes a soldier to feel shame, he or she is instructed to work through it by asking these questions. What is the most upsetting part of the situations to me? What thoughts are triggering the emotions and reaction that I'm having? Identifying our own precepts as icebergs allows us to recognize whether they're true obstacles to helping ourselves or relating to others and learn how to steer around them. One of the most important findings about resiliency is also one of the most basic. Resilient people have one trait in common, a sense of optimism, says Cornum, who retired from the service as a brigadier general in 2012. As she told Medium.com, they believe a problem is in a time frame and not forever, and that there is something you can do about it. The next article in the Reader's Digest is titled Everyday Heroes. A carpenter's memorials have appeared after countless tragedies around the country. This time, the tragedy struck very close to home. He crosses his crosses to bear by Andy Simmons. 20 years ago, 15 wooden crosses appeared on a hill overlooking Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado. It was April 28, 1999, 8 days after a pair of students had shot and killed 12 of their classmates and a teacher before killing themselves. At first, the crosses seemed to be part miracle, part mystery. Before long, their creator stepped forward. Greg Zanis, a carpenter from Sugar Grove, Illinois, who had driven them nearly 1,000 miles to Colorado. Since Columbine, Zanis has built and delivered more than 26,000 crosses, Stars of David, and Crescent Moons to communities across America grieving in the wake of violence, natural disasters, and other catastrophes. He brought them to Paradise, California after wildfires wiped out most of the town. Pittsburgh, where 11 worshipers were killed in a synagogue. Sandy Hook, Connecticut, when 26 children and staff were gunned down in their school. And Las Vegas, where 58 people died while enjoying a music festival. One place Zanis, 68, never experienced to plant his crosses was in his own backyard. On February 15, 2019, he was in his workshop when he heard sirens scream past his window. He looked out to see dozens of first responders racing down the street. Later that day, he learned that a disgruntled ex-employee had walked into the Henry Pratt manufacturing plant in Aurora, Illinois, just 15 minutes from where Zanis lives, and killed 5 former co-workers. Zanis found himself with the same sickening reaction he'd witnessed in so many towns around the country. How could it happen? This is home, he told the Chicago Tribune. This was not supposed to happen here, and yet it did. Soon his phone began to ring. When would he set up his crosses? Zanis worked through the night building 5 monuments to the deceased. Each was 4 feet tall, weighed about 30 pounds, and featured the victim's name and photo and a big red heart. My simple message is just that heart, just that heart on the cross, he told CNN. Love your brother, love your neighbor, don't judge them. Life isn't that complicated. Hate and revenge is. Xanus loaded the crosses carefully into the back of his white pickup and drove to the plant. He already knew where he'd place them, on the sidewalk out front next to a chain-link fence. As he always does, he arrived quietly and left without a word. His work was done. Xanus understands more than most how the families feel. He began building crosses to honor his father-in-law, who was murdered in 1996. Tragedy struck again in 2018 when he buried his 37-year-old daughter, who died of a drug overdose. A few weeks after her death, he was in Parkland, Florida, with the 17 crosses and stars he'd made for the victims at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. When I went to Parkland, I was a mess, he told the Tribune, but I can't allow myself to get consumed in my own grief. I'm offering these families hope. It helps me and it helps them. I know that for a fact because when I leave there, they are smiling. Despite having seen and experienced so much grief, Xanus insists he has no agenda. He isn't advocating for one thing or another. I'm not a gun issue guy. I'm not a church guy, he told the New York Times. There's no interest here other than helping people remember. The next everyday hero is titled They Saved His Life and His Lawn by Andy Simmons. On a steamy July day in Bayonet Point, Florida, Gene Work and his brother-in-law Mark Rucco were resodding Gene's yard. It had grown brown and patchy in the heat, and the homeowners association had threatened to impose a hefty fine if the situation wasn't remedied. The new sod was sitting in the driveway on four pallets, but the job was slow going. Gene, then 40, wasn't feeling right. He went inside to take a break and collapsed on the couch, clutching his chest. His wife, Melissa Work, called 911 quickly. Even though he was staring down death, Gene had one thing on his mind, that lawn. If the sod wasn't put down that day, it would die. While he was having his heart attack, literally in and out of consciousness, he kept begging me to have it put down because he didn't want it to go to waste, Melissa wrote in a Facebook post. Soon, Pasco County Fire Rescue arrived and took Gene and Melissa to the hospital, leaving Rucco behind to tackle the yard. Within an hour, he managed to remove the old grass. He was about to lay the new sod, which he feared would take him well into the night, when two emergency vehicles appeared. Seven men, the same ones who had treated his brother, got out. Gene had told them how badly he'd wanted to get the sod down, so they had returned to help. The job was done in under 2 hours. Meanwhile, Gene had surgery to insert stents in his heart, alleviating a potentially deadly blockage. He's home now, fully recovered, and enjoying his beautiful lawn. The Works are still amazed that those EMTs went above and beyond their job description. These men, Melissa told TampaBay.com, saved Gene's life and then came back to save his grass. That's just so awesome. The next article in the Reader's Digest is from the section called How To Help Your Pet Live Longer. Well, with the right care, you can enhance the quality and quantity of life for your furry friends, by Karen Asp. Huck is a lucky dog and an old one. Most Labrador retrievers make it to around age 12, but at 15, Huck has lived 25% longer than that. If he were the average American with a life expectancy of 78.6 years, he would be 98. What's his secret? It's a combination of things, including nutritious food with vitamins and oils, a lot of love and attention, and exercise, says Huck's owner, Henry Uman. He's also never left alone, but is always with at least one of his three dog siblings or a member of his human family. In 2016, nearly 57% of American households owned a pet, according to the American Veterinary Medical Association. But it's safe to say that 100% of them wish their dog or cat had Huck's love and level of care. In fact, advances in veterinary medicine have made it easier than ever to boost your pet's lifespan and quality of life. Some now standard procedures, for instance, vaccinations against rabies, hepatitis, and more, have had a great impact. On the other end of the spectrum are breakthroughs that help animals survive injuries and illnesses that might have shortened their lives only a few years ago. Take Fridgie, a Bengal cat. Just after his first birthday, Fridgie underwent surgery for a fractured hip, followed by physical therapy on a water treadmill. He recovered, but 7 months later, he fractured his other hip. In March 2018, he had a hip replacement, the first time that vets at Purdue University performed the procedure. Today, Fridgie is as healthy as well a horse. The bill for Fridgie's medical care was steep, almost $10,000, but owners Tyler and Faith Goldsberry thought it was worth it. Pets deserve the best treatment we can give them, and we would never add to our family without having the means to make sure they're taken care of, Tyler says. It helped that the family had pet insurance. Once a rarity, pet insurance is now in enough demand that some employers offer it as a benefit. Should you invest in pet insurance? What about gluten-free food? There are so many health and care options available these days that finding the ones that are worthwhile for your pet can be daunting. This guide is a good place to start. 1. Watch their weight. An estimated 60% of cats and 56% of dogs are overweight or obese, according to the Association for Pet Obesity Prevention. That can lead to big trouble. Excess weight increases the risk of conditions like diabetes, some cancers, and certain breathing problems, while the extra strain on joints can hasten the onset and worsen the severity of arthritis, says Joe Dale, Global Scientific Advocacy and Stakeholder Relations Manager for Mars Pet Care. One study found that being overweight shortened dogs' lifespans by up to 2.5 years compared with ideal weight canine peers. How can you tell whether your pet needs to drop some pounds? When you look at your dog or cat from above, you should see a distinct tuck at the waistline, and you should be able to feel but not see the ribs. If not, a few small changes could help. Walk your dog a few extra blocks a day, limit treats, and weigh your dog or cat regularly. 2. Visit the vet. As with humans, yearly early exams can spot problems soon enough for successful treatment. Because pets age more quickly than humans, issues can creep up fast, says Pete Lands, DVM Director of Emergency and Critical Care at St. Francis Veterinary Center in Swedesboro, New Jersey. Keep up on routine treatments such as vaccinations and deworming, or consider a cat or dog wellness plan, which includes exams, vaccinations, dental cleanings, and tests. 3. Don't fret about gluten. Pets have specific nutritional requirements to stay healthy. Most cats need to eat meat every day to get their protein, but just like the human world, the pet world has its fair share of dietary crazes, most of which you should ignore. For instance, there are plenty of gluten-free dog foods for sale now, but gluten allergies seem to be extremely rare in pets, according to a report published by Tufts University. Visit petfoodinstitute.org for more dietary information. 4. Make an exercise plan. Pets need daily workouts to stay healthy, so a formal exercise regime is a good idea. Aim for between 30 minutes and 2 hours of daily activity, such as walking or running, recommends petmd.com. Athletic breeds such as German Shepherds and Collies will require more exercise, while smaller dogs such as Bulldogs can benefit from a short walk around the neighborhood. You can stimulate your cat by playing with a laser pointer. Avoid aiming it at your cat's eyes, providing catnip-infused toys, or adding perches to your home. And believe it or not, GPS or Wi-Fi-enabled devices can track your pet's steps, calories burned, heart rate, and other indicators. 5. Brush their teeth. According to a Banfield Pet Hospital, 68% of cats and 76% of dogs have dental disease, and it may be linked to the development of heart and kidney disease. To avoid that, brush your pet's teeth every day. It's not as daunting as you might think. Kneel behind your pet and gently lift his or her lips. Then brush the teeth and gums with a pet-friendly toothbrush or finger brush and pet toothpaste. Dogs especially dislike the taste of mint, and you don't want Fido swallowing fluoridated paste. You should also get your pet's teeth professionally cleaned by your vet at least once a year. 6. Consider pet insurance. Think about what kind of care you want to provide your pet. Some policies cover only accidents, others cover everything, including wellness care. All have deductibles. If you're a do-it-all pet parent, then insurance will take most of the financial concerns out of your mind, Dr. Land says. Premiums obviously vary, averaging about $10 a month for limited coverage and $100 a month for comprehensive care, according to PetInsuranceReview.com. 7. Protect against parasites. All pets are susceptible to infectious diseases and parasites. Gail says. For example, according to Lillian Wong, DVM, a veterinarian with Banfield Pet Hospital, you'll find heartworm wherever you find mosquitoes. Check your pet for ticks regularly and ask your vet about preventive tools such as medications and monthly injections. 8. Think about a DNA test. It may sound crazy, but pinpointing your dog's true genetic history can help protect against breed-specific diseases. For example, Labrador Retrievers and German Shepherds are likely to develop hip dysplasia. DNA tests aren't 100% accurate. Neither are the commercial tests for humans, but they'll help narrow down the possible breeds. For $189, the Embark Dog DNA test screens for breed traits, ancestry, and risk of more than 100 genetic canine health conditions. 9. Help them age gracefully. Cats reach senior status when they're 11 to 14 years old. For dogs, it's around 7 or 8. If your cat has arthritis, consider a litter box with lower walls. Has your pet's vision deteriorated? Place extra lights on stairs and in dark hallways. Finally, put rugs on slick floors and baby gates at the top of stairs to prevent falls. This is Roz 31. I'm sorry. This is Roz signing off for the Reader's Digest. I will be back next week.